Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and today I'm talking to Kristen and Pete. How are y'all today?
Great.
Doing well.
And we're going to talk about their Fi journey, RV life, continuing to work while one spouse is actually retired. And I think there's some debate around some of the portion of that, but we'll get into the details. We'll also get into balancing different like Fi and fire risk tolerance levels in a relationship. And that's something that hits close to home because Elizabeth and I have a different sort of risk tolerance. We'll get into traveling, minimalism, some estate planning stories if we have time. There's so much to get into. And I want to start with kind of an exciting time frame for you guys. And I didn't mention it before, but you guys have been on the road for a little while, and I'm curious about like when you were downsizing, because you guys had a house, right? And you had to downsize dramatically to move into the RV. So I want to start with a story, and then we'll back into the Fi journey and all that stuff. So take us back to a few years ago, and maybe you could let us know like how long you've been sort of like on the road and in the RV.
Well, okay then. So we've been on the road for a little over 3.5 years, and it all started with us buying a camper prior to that with the intention of traveling a little bit and maybe someday moving into it. But then my son came to us before he graduated from high school and said, look, I'm not going to college. I'm moving to Montana to follow my girlfriend, which was a wonderful idea, but that's what he did. But that gave us the opportunity to say, okay, if you're sure, we're selling everything or giving it away and we're moving into the camper and taking off. And he said, yep, I'm out. So he made plans to move. We made plans to downsize. We packed the camper full, got it ready to go. And then we had a huge sale and put the house on the market and took off. So that was 3.5 years ago. And it's been fantastic ever since.
Wow. Kristen, what would you like to add to the story here?
Nothing really. I covered
it. Pete makes it sound pretty easy, but it took a while to downsize. We knew we didn't want to keep that house. That house was great for the phase of life that we were in, but it would have made a horrible investment property. And we didn't want to keep it long term for us whenever we're done traveling, whenever that is. So We had worked on downsizing even before, since we knew life was going to be different. And it took a couple months to get everything taken care of.
Fastest 2 months of my life, though.
Yeah.
Really?
No, not really. But oh. Yes, actually, if you're watching this, much like Doug and Elizabeth, if you're cool, we want to travel with you. It's really simple. Downsize, minimize, jump into a camper, come travel with us.
It should be simple, yeah. So, and you guys knew that eventually you would be downsizing. So psychologically you knew like, hey, we're going to get rid of some stuff. Or it was only when your son was like, hey.
No. So this is where Kristen needs to be credited, because when we got together, she was already basically a minimalist. And so, I mean, she had philosophies that I'd never heard of just because I wasn't brought up that way or didn't live that way. Mm-hmm. She said, look, things like, if you haven't seen it in 3 months, do you really need it? Get rid of it. And so we started living that way, especially combining two households, two vacuum cleaners, two microwaves, two whatever, all of the stuff. We got into the mode of getting rid of the things that we didn't need. And so it just became second nature for us. So when we started moving into the camper, we were already in that mode. It was easy enough for us to say, don't need it, get it gone.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. These are lessons that I need to hear, because I'm like, oh yeah, there's stuff I haven't seen in so long, years. And I'm like, I've moved it 3 times already. I mean, yeah. People end up doing that because, you know, it's easier to move it sometimes than to like make a decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and whether you make a decision about it or not, you are making a decision about it and procrastinating the decision at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is funny. Minimizing is all about making decisions. And so many of us have so much decision fatigue from just living normal life that then it's extremely hard to undertake minimizing your stuff because you have to make so many decisions about it all.
Decisions, yeah. But more simply, if you just get into the habit of it, then it's much easier. And I imagine making the decisions would be much easier also, but at least the process, the physical, the action of getting rid of things, taking stuff to Goodwill, contacting a relative and saying, do you want this? Putting it up for sale on Marketplace, whatever. Mm-hmm. It becomes much easier.
Yeah. And I have been experimenting a little bit with like putting things on Marketplace or Craigslist. And it was actually fun. I'm like, oh, someone actually could use it. And I got rid of a little bit of clutter. Anyway, I need to keep moving on that because it's a good thing. And I don't want to have like, I mean, there's a lot of stuff laying around. I need to get rid of some of the books because I'm not like reading them all the time or anything.
And I remember that Elizabeth volunteers at the library processing donated books. So you might have an easy in.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So definitely going to do that. So the hilarious thing, and then I'll get back onto the interview here, but you guys came over for dinner the other day and you made a big impact on Elizabeth. And she was like, oh, this minimalism stuff is really like, we need to think about this a little bit more. Big impact. We were talking about it. And then she went to volunteer at the library. You know what she fucking came back with? No, she brought a book.
Yeah.
She was like, I want to declutter. And we were just talking. I was like, I think I need to get rid of some books. So then she brought a book back and she was like, I know.
Well, part of the minimalism philosophy is also stuff needs to flow.
Totally.
Yeah. Is your home the Dead Sea where there's only input and there's no outflow? Since you might as well be bringing in the things that you want for that phase of life. Like if there's a book that you want to read, great. Are you done with it? Send it on down the river. You know, you don't want to just keep collecting stuff because that's very stagnant. Mm-hmm. You might as well move forward with the stuff that helps you in that phase of life instead of just, why are you a time capsule of every phase of life you have ever been?
Right. Yeah. And one thing I realized, I really like the idea of about to read a book. So like I have a stack of books and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm not reading that fast. I need to slow it down. And anyway.
But if it brings you joy,
I don't know.
For it.
Have stacks of books?
Yeah. It makes me look smart. Most of them. Yeah. Look at all the books that I acquired really good ones. Smart. Yeah. Okay. So back to it. We'll backtrack and actually like hear about the jobs and or careers. So people get a little bit of a reference point. And I did mention one of you is working, one of you is not working. So Pete, why don't you kick it off like career wise, like if you just give a broad description of the work that you kind of did over the years.
So I'll give in my relationship with Kristen broad. Which is when we got together, I moved down to Lawrence, Kansas and started a handyman business. So I had a handyman business for about 10 years and we did really well and made really good contacts and friends. And it was a really nice business aside from the employees that I had, because stereotypical construction workers are the ones that you get to work for you when you're a handyman. And those are not the people that you want to take into a $750,000 house to fix a fan or some drywall work, because you don't know if they're casing the house for later or if they're going to do the work or what. So I at one point had 7 employees, and by the end of it, I got rid of everybody and just had one guy that was working with me, and it worked out really well. And then when Kristen and I decided to go out on the road after my son came to us and said he's moving, I sold the business, and that gave us the freedom to take off. So that's where we are. So with that experience, our relationship works out really good being on the road, because we've got a camper and a truck and all the stuff in the camper and the truck that needs maintenance and needs to be taken care of. And I've got the ability and the know-how to do it. So I keep us on the road and Kristen keeps us afloat.
Got it. Okay. And then just curious, did you just grow up being handy and like understanding
some
construction?
Okay. Yeah, and in construction, and that has basically been my career path well forever.
I mean, great. Okay,
so it's just second nature.
Okay. And like all sorts of stuff, so plumbing, some simple you electrical stuff, like you've had to deal whatever, irrigation, blah blah blah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. What about you?
So I work remotely, which is great. I know pandemic was quite rough, but I got remote work out of it. And I work for state government and I'm in computer-based mapping. So all that to say, I am actually mostly a computer programmer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very fun. Yeah. Do you like it?
I do.
That's good. It's hard to find. Any difficulty like working remotely? Some people really miss the social aspect. Other people don't. How'd that work for you?
I'm pretty introverted most of the time. And at work, it always bothered me.
I'm all she needs.
I didn't like certain parts of office culture where I shared an office. And my office mate was great. Really nice guy. He would have people come in and visit him regularly. And they would stay for hours just talking about this and that. And here I am trying to like outline some huge section of code and there's just people talking. So it was wonderful working at home instead where I could curate my own environment to be able to focus. And so if they made me come back into the office, I'd just quit.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
The real difficulty we had, so in the early part of our travels, we actually went over to Hawaii for about a month and rented camper vans on various islands. And trying to work remotely from Hawaii was horrible. The internet access is not always consistent, and working from a camper van is really not my style. That's why we're in an RV.
I applaud people who can live in a camper van. That's a whole new level.
Yeah. And plus the time change was really difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is, it's pretty dramatic if you have to make meetings and people expect work at certain times or whatever.
Exactly.
So. Okay, cool. So work stuff is boring, so we're going to not talk about that too much. But it does kind of level set so people understand where you're coming from. And how long have you guys been together? Like, I think that's a good reference point to
perhaps. Forever.
No, we've been together for 13 years and married for 11.
Okay. How'd you guys meet?
Through work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
At that time, Pete was also doing GIS for a nonprofit, or GIS is Geographic Information Systems, which is computer-based mapping. He was doing that for a nonprofit. And then the office that I was in was collaborating on a project. And so that's how we met initially. Actually, that was a long time ago. I was like 22 when we met. And at that time, I was having a bunch of fun with my friends, and I was like, this dude is like married with three young kids, super boring. So we were just straight up work colleagues. And then through the years, I would see him at work conferences in the state. And at one particular conference, he looked so bad, I thought he had cancer. And then I come to find out that he was actually going through a divorce at the time. And so we stayed in contact and would collaborate on work things every now and then when needed. And then, gosh, it would have been 9 years after we first met or something like that.
Yeah.
I was complaining to friends of like, I'm just going to die being a lonely state government employee lady with like denim jumpers and a bunch of cats. And she's like, what about Pete? And I was like, who's Pete? So she set us up and we went out on a date and that was it.
Yeah, that was Mother's Day weekend of 13?
Yeah.
Of 13. We've been together since then.
How about that?
Yeah.
Interesting. That's pretty funny. Denim jumpers, huh? Why is that a reference point?
There was a particular...
Because we know some.
Yes. There was a particular state employee who we both knew, actually, and she would wear, like, unironically wear the denim jumpers that have, like, the embroidery on the front. Like, and
bedazzled or something.
She's okay. Such different. A great lady,
yeah,
though.
Yeah,
she's yeah. She's really so nice lady. Okay. She's unfortunately passed since, so... Okay. I mean,
it's a reference point. Okay,
exactly.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, on to the fire stuff. So when did you and who discovered the fire community and started following along?
So I got introduced to the fire community actually by my dad in about 2011, 2012-ish, sometime in there. He had found the Mr. Money Mustache article on surprisingly simple math to early retirement, and he shared it with me. And I thought that was amazing. So I, you know, a lot of people say I've always naturally been a saver, and that's true for me. And after that, it gave me an extra reason to keep saving. And then when Pete and I got together, I informed him this is the path that I'm on. And if we're going to be in a long-term relationship, it'd be great if you're also on this path. So then
that really wasn't how it went. These were relationship questions. The first one.
Yeah, they were deal breakers.
The first one, which I appreciate because, I mean, she was straightforward. Everything's on the table. And she said, look, if you want to have more kids, I have three children. She said, if you want to have more kids, I'm not the girl for you. And I was like, I got three. So no, sounds good. And she said, and secondly, I'm on the path to early retirement. So if that sounds good to you, then let's keep talking. If not, I'm not the girl for you. And I was like, early retirement? Yeah, that sounds good. Okay, let's keep going. So we did. And the more she taught me about it, the more I got invested in it, and the better it got. I mean, just month after month and year after year. And watching things grow was really exciting for me in our portfolio, which made me want to do it more. But it all started with and came from Krishna.
And you mentioned sort of naturally saving. So were you investing in your 401k and maxing it out like as soon as you got a job kind of thing? Or do you remember?
So when I first started the retirement plan, I first started actually in county government. And in the state of Kansas, they get put into the CAPERS, which is the Kansas pension system, and it kind of stinks. And so at that point in time, my dad had been talking about Roth IRAs for a long time. We had gotten set up with Roth IRAs long before. Like, my dad set them up for us when we first got jobs. And so I knew that this already existed in Schwab. I knew I had the login information. And so when I started working, it was very easy for me. When I had extra cash, I would put it in the Roth IRA. And then at that time, I didn't know about index funds. And so things were invested. My dad is more of a dividend investor, and that's okay. He's fine. So I tended to follow his advice, which is completely fine. Anything that is invested is still better than trying to invest it perfectly.
Right.
And so then as I started ingesting more FIRE literature and learning about index funds, got things switched over to index funds.
Okay. Gotcha. So you had things set up and you were, if you had some extra money, you would invest. Why was your dad so savvy? It sounds like, I mean, if he had the Roth IRA set up for you guys already. So yeah, why was he so knowledgeable in that area?
So I'm very fortunate that both sides of my family have a lot of financial education that is passed down generation to generation. So I feel very fortunate for that background. My philosophy is generational wealth is only half the money that gets passed down through inheritance. It's also funny because my family tends to be very long-lived people. And so when great-grandma passes away at 97, grandma passes away almost at 101, like the next generation isn't inheriting money until they're in their 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
So you can't bank on this. So you might as well have the knowledge of how to build your own so that you can live a halfway decent life and not have your retirement be, oh, my mom's going to die and then I'll be able to retire. Yeah. You know, that's a... You should never put your retirement plan on the death of someone else. Right. Like, that's not a plan.
Not great. Okay. So, Pete, for you, like, would you consider yourself like a natural saver as well? Like, how did you operate before?
No.
Okay.
No,
tell us about it.
In my first marriage, we made money, we spent money. And there was very little conscious effort into saving anything. It was all about paying the bills and having a great time and raising kids. Now, we were in the process. We were very young and we were raising three children. So it all went to worthy causes, my kids, for the most part. But otherwise, there was no thought into what we were going to do in the future. And then when I started working for the nonprofit, we had a retirement account. And then Kristen calls this luck. I call it just a brilliant stroke of genius, but I invested really early in Solar City, which was then bought by Tesla. So I rode the Tesla wave right through and since have gotten rid of all of that and invested in other things. But that being able to watch that and then getting together with Kristen and getting an education in what I was actually doing, that helped me the most. I mean, Kristen and everything that she and her family were doing is what educated me and helped me the most.
Gotcha. Interesting. And would both of you, like, would you consider yourself frugal? And Kristen, you could answer first.
I used to be frugal. And Pete has helped me learn how to spend more money. And so I feel like we just spend money all the freaking time, but I really enjoy what comes out the other end. And so I would not consider us some of the more frugal people.
Oh, no.
But then at the same time, I've heard other podcasts or gone to case studies where people talk about their annual spending. And I was just like eyes open of like, how can one family spend $190,000 a year? Like, that's, I can't even conceive it. So it's interesting because like the term frugal is a very fluid term. Yes, compared to that, we're frugal. But compared to another family who spends $25,000 a year, we're just like, make it rain. So,
yeah. It's okay, Pete. Yeah, what about you?
We luckily, or whatever, we complement each other really well. When Kristen would say, I can't have that tea because it's 79 cents and I can get it for 59 cents over here. And I would say, nah, that's stupid. Here, take my money, you know? So, and conversely, I'd go into a store and I want that. That's what I'm getting. And I don't care what the number of it is. I just go up and swipe a card or throw cash at them and move on with my day. So the two of those philosophies coming together has really helped both of us out. And it has morphed into, it's okay to spend money on things that you value. And travel is one thing that we really value, but also things that we are going to use, like mountain biking, my new love. And so, besides my wife. And so
thank you, dear.
For my birthday, we spent a pretty big chunk of change on a really nice bike for me, and I use it all the time. Just all the time. So yeah, we help each other out, especially when we're looking at something and Kristen will say, do you really need that? And I say, no, I don't. It'll probably just sit in the camper like, and not do anything.
Yesterday when we went to the Danish furniture store and sat in
these. We weren't going to buy those.
Sitting in those stressless chairs. They're really so comfortable. Oh my gosh. And then you reach around the armrest and look at the price and it's $4,900.
For a chair.
And even
I don't
if
even think
chair,
that included the ottoman.
I don't know.
But I was taking measurements. Yeah, you know, I was seeing if that was going to fit in the camper because it was really comfortable.
I was actually kind of grateful when Pete was like, all right, have a great afternoon to the sales lady.
And I could feel Kristen saying, like, how are we going to get out of here?
I was finally able to exhale because I was like, do you really need a $5,000 chair when we live in a camper?
Yeah, I was like, where are you going to put the fucking things? I guess, how big is the camper?
32 foot.
Okay.
It's 32 feet long and then it's got opposing slide out. So it's, we've got 8 feet of inside clearance. So it's plenty of room for Kristen to do yoga or whatever she wants to do and for us to separate ourselves, which is important.
Yeah.
I mean, because
you need space.
Yeah. You're living on top of each other. So one person could go to one side and the other person can go to the other side and you don't annoy each other that much.
Okay. So we'll get into the RV stuff soon, but it sounds like, Pete, you were open to the FIRE concept. You're like, oh, retirement, this is great. Or early or otherwise, you're like, this is a good, positive, you know, path for us to go down. Any reservations or were you just like, I get this. I understand.
Oh, no, I still don't get it. But
you get
what,
it, man.
What I got was the phrase early retirement,
yeah.
Go ride my bike. That was what I got. How we got there, I didn't care.
Sure.
And so if Kristen, who is brilliant at doing all of the research, says we need to move this money from here to there, or we need to do this, then I just say, yeah, okay, whatever. So it really does need to be credited all to Kristen. And I was just the, okay, fine person.
Okay. Got it. And how involved are you, Pete, with like where, I guess, the money goes, right? Because like some people are like, I'm hands off. I don't really care. Elizabeth and I are more, we're both hands on and we have different opinions. So we actually tend to clash sometimes. So, I mean, I think probably we end up with a better outcome because of the ideas that are coming in. Hopefully it's distilled to the good ones, but it's a messy path to get there. So yeah, how active are you in the, you know, the spreadsheets and decision-making?
What's a spreadsheet? I don't know what that is. But touching on risk tolerance, index funds, that's boring. I mean, you want to put your money in that? Fine, go ahead.
You get excited about VUG and VU.
Just because of the ticker. Oh. I got my VUG and VU. But so instead of just dumping everything into an index funds, on occasion, rare occasions, when I am getting rid of something, like when I got rid of my Tesla, I said, okay, what am I going to put this in? And Kristen's response is, well, you should put it in an index fund. Well, that's boring. I didn't. I put it into a stock. So I've got that individual stock. I still have a lot of index funds, but that touches on the risk tolerance thing. So how involved am I in it? Not very. Kristen really seems to relish in doing the research and figuring those things out. And then if she says, you probably need to put that there, then I say, okay, whatever. And that's what I do. But otherwise, if it sounds sexy, I'll do it. Otherwise, I don't.
Well, and part of our different strategies also come from, Pete likes things that are just slightly more complex than I do in terms of diversity and variety. So I would be perfectly fine if all my assets were put in, you know, VTSAX, VTI, whatever. Or is it VT? I get the
VTI.
VTI. I get VT and VTI mixed up. And the one that is international does not have an I in it. That's how I have to remember it. So anyways.
It's VTUX or something like this. Anyway.
I don't remember.
People look anyways, it up. Yeah, yeah. It's like not you.
Like, US. If it were up to me, I would probably just put my entire whatever account just in the one fund and then not think about it after that. But Pete's like, oh, what about this growth fund? Like, what about this? What about that? And at that point, I was like, oh, it probably doesn't matter. That's fine, too. And so those are the types of input that we have, because I know at the end of the day, if my funds are in VTI or in VUG or VU, they're all going to go up. Like, the stocks that all of them have in common are probably 95% of each share. And so that's well within my...
Would you call that complex?
You just have a lot.
I call that ADHD. Like,
it's like you have a whole bookshelf of index funds instead of just having one book. Yeah.
One reason I like to have people in the studio is you can see the body language. And when you were answering that, Kristen, Pete crossed his arms.
So it's stupid.
It's like, it's subtle, but like on a computer screen, you can't tell it so much. But in here, I'm just like, oh, this is good. And it really makes a difference to see people face to face in the body language. So that is something I do try to do. Unless I know someone really well, like I'm trying not to do any recorded stuff. But yeah, hilarious, crossing your arms.
Because I disagreed with her. Because typically, I'm not the complex one. She's the complex one.
I'm the
very simple butterfly brain kind of person. So I was curious. I was intrigued when you said complex. Yeah.
And it's like a slight optimization. You're looking for a little more upside. Are you like a card player? Do you like gambling or anything like that? Or
with Kristen or with family when we get together? But sure. No, not to go to poker night or anything like that.
Interesting. Okay.
I can't lie. I mean, poker, no.
You're not going to bluff it. Okay.
No.
All right. Very interesting. Okay. So you guys were aligned on the FIRE journey. Did you have a specific date in mind where you're like, we want to retire as soon as possible? Were you like, oh, we'll just see how it shakes out over the next few years? How did you approach it?
That's a good question.
Well, we didn't have a date. We've never had a date other than a launching date to travel full time. But then a retirement date was more of a number, cash number. And we reached that. But then Kristen's got a really good job. So she loves what she's doing. So she keeps doing that.
I think we always had more like lifestyle goals than strict financial goals. Yes, we wanted to get to financial independence because it meant we reached a point where we could literally do whatever we wanted to at that point in time. And so it was less about getting out of a job and more about how do we use this incredible tool that we have to create the lifestyle that we want to keep living day after day after day. And we reached that point when we started traveling full time. And at that point, the job focus became less, if that makes sense. Like needing to reach a specific financial goal just so I could quit my job, that wasn't necessarily a driving factor for me. So it's just a little bit different.
Okay.
And still, if anybody asked me, what is your fine number? I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
Well, our answer is we reached it.
Yeah.
But we don't know what the number was.
It was like a fuzzy range.
Yeah.
Right. Similar with us too, because like we know the math and what the projections would tell us, but also like the markets have been really good the last couple of years. So it's always like at a high and like you can't count on it to be that high for a while. So it's like when people hit a certain number, it's like as the market inflated, I mean, you can come at it and poke holes in that specific number. But anyway, you guys wanted a specific lifestyle, that freedom to be able to travel and like generally control your time. So once you were able to support that, you were like, this is good and you feel confident. Now you're continuing to work, even though maybe you don't need to. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Why are you continuing to work?
So there's a couple different reasons, and I still have some more psychological work to do. I understand that work is something that I am very good at. I am very good at my job. And I like doing something regularly that I'm very good at. And then I like it when people tell me I did a good job. And, you know, so there's some more work that I need to do personally of, okay, how can I get that in other ways? Or do I need to like get over this?
Yeah.
And that's part of it. Another part is that, well, and I do not, Pete's mom is great. She's starting to have some more health problems. Mm. She doesn't make a lot of money. She is on this Kansas pension system that mm-hmm. I previously mentioned that kind of stinks. Between that and Social Security, she doesn't have enough coming in every month to support what she needs. And so I like having a little bit more income for us so that we can help her have the best life possible. And so that's, she's a lovely woman. And a lot of people have ideas about like supporting relatives of like, it's your money. They should have saved for their retirement. And I'm like, this poor lady has asthma and she cannot afford her co-pays on her asthma medication. So
but we can.
Why would I not help her out with her medication copay mm-hmm. so that she's less likely to go into the emergency room having an asthma attack, which caused a panic attack, and then her whole life is basically ruined for a month after that as she's trying to recover from this. Mm. It's so much easier in terms of spending a little bit of time and money to just calm the waves.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I could probably quit my job and we could still afford to help her out with stuff.
Well, we certainly could.
Yeah.
It would just require more effort on our part. And, mm-hmm. and in order to simplify things, Kristen keeps working and we just have no issues at all.
Okay.
So it's fine.
Yeah, I understand that. And obviously everybody's family dynamic is different. So it makes perfect sense. I mean, if you like your job, it's not like you're dreading it or anything. You have the freedom that you're looking for. So it all makes sense. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Sorry to hear about your mom.
Oh, thank you. She's fine.
And like you're saying, it sounds like it's a normal or not a huge amount of money, or at least the way you described it in your example, it seems perfectly reasonable to help out.
You should have her on your podcast.
Oh my gosh. Well, there's such a huge range between not helping a relative with anything and also paying for everything they could possibly ask for. You know, are we buying her a trip to Europe? No. Are we helping out with some groceries and medication? Absolutely. You know, so I think there's always room. There's always room to be generous.
Okay. All right. So before we move on to the RV portion, is there any other broad stuff with FIRE or anything along the journey that's relevant right now? Other stuff will come up later, but what do you have, Pete?
Nothing.
No, okay.
Go ahead. okay, you fire people are so weird. I mean, you're great. And you have provided us with resources that we never had before and information and data, but I just don't get you. And this is what I attribute this all to. So when we went to Economy 3 years ago, we met some fantastic people, and most of them are millionaires. And I would ask them, why are you going to the session? You've written a book about this very topic, or you've read this book, or you know this, and you're already financially set. Why did you pay thousands of dollars to come here to Cincinnati and go to this conference in order to hear all the stuff that you already know and do all the things that you're already doing? And they'd say, several of them said, well, we just like to get together with our friends and drink beer. And I thought, well, okay, so call your friends up and get together and drink beer. Why do you all have to do that to go to do it and spend a bunch of money going to Cincinnati to do it or to any of the other conferences and do it? And it took me a long time in my conservative brain, my Midwest conservative brain, quit spending money doing this stuff and then finally adopt the position that we have now, which is if you find joy in it, it's okay to spend money on. You like to get together with your friends and drink beer, but you have to spend a couple thousand dollars traveling and in hotels in order to do that, then that's worth it. And so it has clicked.
Yeah.
And so now, well, I understand it.
And but it also, took a while. Those events give people a designated meeting time. Since the more five friends that I get, like I want to hang out with them, but everybody travels so much, yeah. Like coordinating travel schedules. So you're in the same place at the same time. Like it's crazy. Like with Doug and Elizabeth, we met you guys 4 years ago, and in that time, we've seen each other
twice.
This
is the second time, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, coordinating travel schedules, like, it's really difficult. And so, but if you ask your friends, are you going to this conference or this campfire or something, and they say yes, you know you're going to both be in the same place at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, it took me a little while to catch up.
Yeah.
I get it now.
Gotcha. I have thought about taking a break from Economy or other conferences. But Economy is super high leverage with the number of people that you'll see.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, 90, 100 friends that I know by name or whatever. And it's, you know, I think about taking a break, but then I'm like, oh, it would be so hard to even see 10 of those people traveling around, like you said, coordinating other trips and schedules and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's a good one. You guys are due.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, and no offense to Diana, like we only have one beef with Economy. It's cold in Cincinnati in March. And we travel to follow the weather.
Yeah.
And being cold, well, and last time we went, we took the RV with us up to Cincinnati.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just
cold.
Just cold.
Yeah.
You miss, so traditionally, yeah, there's always like some rain or a little flurry action. And this last time, it was like 70.
Oh, really?
It was very warm. Yeah, yeah. I wore shorts the whole time. And yeah.
You wear shorts the whole time.
I do. Yeah. If it's over 35, well, I'll wear shorts.
So still thinking about like what the Phi community brings us, I have met so many Phi friends and I understand that nobody wants to talk about work, but I'm always interested to ask what people did before they retired because it lends everyone certain skill sets. And so it's fabulous, you know. So down in Phoenix, I meet Susanna, who's a retired kidney doctor.
Great stories.
You know, and I just mentioned I'm going to my annual physical and she's like, hey, bring me your blood work. I'll look over it. And it's awesome. Like you have friends who are willing to, how much would it cost to go to get a second opinion on your annual blood work. That's awesome. And Susanna was willing to look at it for free. But then Pete's like, oh, hey, can I fix this? Well, she asked Pete, can you fix some stuff at my condo? So it's wonderful that you almost have this more like barter. Hey, what are your skills? What are you interested in? You get to have a lot of neat friends with a lot of neat stories and neat abilities.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Well, one thing I want to go back to, you said that you like to be good at something, like your job. And then you also like to hear that you did a good job. And recently I interviewed Robert and Carla. And I think I said something to Robert because he was like, he's doing well in his job. And he can stop working, but he continues to work. And he was like, I feel like I have gotten like all the accolades and awards and whatever. And I was like, that's great. I was like, it turns out it actually doesn't matter. Like, I mean, psychologically, and he did a good job, but I'm like, it doesn't actually matter. And it conceptually, I'm sure you, I mean, it does matter, but also it doesn't matter at all.
Well, and this is part of like, I'm totally a recovering perfectionist, recovering people pleaser.
Yeah.
And I know this is still a remnant of my process moving forward of why do I need somebody else to tell me that I've been doing a good job? I was like, I still want the A+ and the gold star on the paper.
Yeah. And I mean, and you acknowledged it before, so I'm not picking on you.
Or, oh, no.
I guess if I have to tell you I'm not picking on you, then does that mean I'm picking on her?
Yeah. But no. That's okay. She's a big girl.
Yeah. Well, it's super interesting because like, I think when I did well in high school and got awards and stuff like that. But then when I got to college, I was like, oh, I'm like bottom third. Like I'm not that good. And everyone is so much smarter. I got no recognition. Then I was like, oh, this also makes sense. And it makes sense that I'm not getting any, but you're good. kept getting it.
Well, and it's not like the state of Kansas is a small place, and doesn't take a whole lot to be really good at something in Kansas.
Don't sell yourself short. You have a lot.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So that's just an aside, but you are, it seems like you're working on it, and you'll find other stuff because you'll have other hobbies or you'll do things where like Elizabeth, she does puzzles now and really wants to like, I mean, she practices puzzles so that she could do better at these competitions, they're free. I mean, they're typically free.
What's the difference between doing a puzzle and practicing a puzzle?
One of them's not fun.
Okay.
she'll set a timer and like compare it to her friends that also puzzle with her. So they'll like do the same puzzle and time it. So it's like a success metric. So it's a great way to take something that's fun and then
make it less fun.
Put constraints and make a competition.
Sounds stressful.
Yeah. If she doesn't do as well as she expected or hopes, does she get upset or stressed?
Has she ever like done a table sweep on a puzzle that she was struggling with?
Yeah. There's certainly disappointment if she's slower than expected.
Those goddamn clouds.
I know. Well, I was going to say she doesn't typically listen to the show, but I think she'll be curious to listen. So I'll have to be like, skip a couple minutes in here where we talk about your, I mean, she enjoys it a lot and enjoys doing puzzles. She doesn't time all of them, but every now and then she does try to practice, which is, I mean, like if you want to get better at something, you have to go to do that deliberate practice where it's on the edge of comfort. And that
same with Kristen and hiking.
Yeah. It does make sense that you, to get good at something, you have to go through the discomfort of practicing it. You're not going to get good without that middle piece. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On a deeper level with Kristen, though, Kristen has always had an issue with confidence, which is beyond me because she has so much ability and so many, especially mentally, but now also especially physically, but still lacks some of the confidence to take on some challenges. When we go hiking or when we're talking about Capitol Peak and the knife's edge on Capitol Peak, that's something that I really want to do. I just have the confidence that I know I'm going to be able to do that. People have died on it. I get that. I understand. And Kristen is a hard no. I'm not going to do Capitol Peak.
I haven't said that.
Oh, you haven't?
No. I can probably do it. And I am likely going to feel incredibly nauseous the entire time. And it'll most likely be fine.
It will be fine. Right?
Most likely.
Right. So I think Kristen getting accolades and positive reinforcement, good jobs, gold stars, it really helps her confidence.
That makes sense.
Probably.
Yeah.
And a slight detour, which is how the show goes. Yeah. So 14ers. So these are 14,000 foot peaks in Colorado. This is a quest that you guys are on. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, the overall story with 14ers?
I started hiking 14ers with my dad in roughly 2007-ish, and it was super fun. And so, like, we would come out about once a year and hike one or two 14ers together. Sometimes my uncle would join. And then I had a few friends come out one time and we did Bierstadt and it was just a lot of fun. So then when Pete and I started dating, I knew that he was in super good shape. And so I invited him, hey, let's take a week and go out to Colorado.
This was a relationship test.
We'll see if you like hiking 14ers or not.
We'll see if you can hike 14ers.
Well, different people like different avenues of fitness. Some people love running races. Some people love lifting weights. And so a long, hard hike is not everybody's cup of tea. And that is something where it wasn't like a deal breaker for the relationship. If Pete didn't actually enjoy it, I'm not going to force somebody else to go hiking. That is one of the worst ways ever to go hiking, is when someone is forcing you to go hiking. Yeah. So, but then I'd be like, okay, then I know I just need to plan these trips by myself or with other friends. But of course he liked it. And here we are.
What a simple explanation. This was a relationship test is what this was. I was in really good shape at the time. And she said, let's go climb this mountain. And I said, okay. And so we go out to Colorado and we went out there. So Kristen, being a data analyst and being trained by her dad, who is also a data analyst, how to climb mountains. This is how many ounces of water you take. This is how many grams of nutrition you take. This is the speed at which you hike. This is how often you stop in order to get nutrition and hydration. I mean, everything was prescribed. And I was this kid in a candy store. I'm like, look at that rock. Wow. I'd climb all over it. That's a tree. Hug it. And all the things. And so I annoyed the shit out of her the first time we climbed a mountain, but we went up to South Elbert. She took a nap on South Elbert. I went over to North Elbert, came back, picked her up, and we went back down. And then we proceeded to climb like two more 14ers that week that we were out here. So it was great. And I found something that I really enjoyed doing, which A, was climbing mountains, and B, spending time with Kristen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. How long did you acclimate?
We didn't.
You just started, and you guys were in
younger,
good shape.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and it was interesting. My dad had the philosophy of, you get out to Colorado and climb a 14er your first day, like beat the altitude sickness to the punch. And that strategy actually has worked really well for me. You just come out, hike a 14er, and then the next day you take off and start working on your acclimation. So interestingly, the only times I've had issues with altitude sickness are when I've already been in Colorado for about 4 or 5 days. Mm-hmm. So, and then there's been two 14er attempts that I knew as soon as I woke up that morning, I feel horrible. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do it.
So, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Why do you think the altitude sickness kicked in after a couple of days? Was it because you did that 14er on the first day that you got there?
Could be.
Good question. With altitude sickness, like for me, I don't know what the triggers are. You know, it's always hydration and make sure you're eating clean. And I don't drink anyways. And so that one's not a factor for me. So it's always just question marks of when is it going to happen? Who knows?
Do you know the elevation? Wait, because knock on wood, I haven't had any altitude sickness. I haven't done nearly as many 14ers as you, but yeah, I'm slightly nervous because I know it could be pretty acute if you run into issues, but any idea on the elevation? It's like when I hit 13.5, then you're like,
it's different for everybody.
Yeah. The days that I woke up, there's certain days that I wake up and just know it is not happening today.
Okay.
Like I just felt crappy from the moment I woke up. But then there have been a couple others where I don't know, I feel pretty crappy at summits, but I don't know if that's because, like when we did Aeolus, it's pretty challenging class 3 and it's stressful. I was super scared. And so of course I'm, you know, like clinging to rocks on the top, just feeling incredibly nauseous. And I don't know if it was because of altitude or stress at that point in time. Mm-hmm. When we did Massive, I did not enjoy that mountain.
It's the best mountain ever.
No. And that one, I think I was just really physically tired and I felt crappy at the top.
She was pissed off at me because I was having a great time.
Isn't that awful?
You're like running.
When we're in a relationship and he, like, the more fun he's having on those hikes, the more I'm like resenting the whole thing and getting in a worse
mood. A dick.
And like, you need to stop being so happy.
Yeah.
So it's just hilarious thinking about it later.
Fun killer.
Yeah.
That's a pretty long one, right? Massive. It's like 14, 15.
We did the shorter version where you've got this one section that's like 2,000 feet elevation gain in a mile. And it just like sucks.
It was awesome.
Okay.
And then you get up and then you have like 7 false summits to do.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Not my favorite.
All right.
Want to go?
I'll have to work up to it, but yeah, I love Leadville, so it's
yeah.
Okay, super interesting. I kind of lost track of how many 14ers have you guys done, and then we'll move to the RV stuff.
You're at least halfway through.
I'm in the low 30s.
Yeah.
Out of 58,
and I think I'm at 27.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Something super like cool. That. Very so fun.
We'll get as many knocked out this summer as we can.
Okay.
But side issue, elevation high points also.
Yes.
We've come across some wonderful, just little known corners.
Well, these are state. State. So high points. As we're traveling around, we're trying to get to as many of the state elevation high points as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bora Peak, Boundary Peak, Wheeler Peak. All of these are just fantastic hikes. Mount Whitney, California. They're wonderful hikes, which we'd never known about if we weren't on the path to do the elevation high points too.
Yeah, it's good to have like some purpose. Even, I mean, it's not arbitrary, but it's just like, oh, may as well like rope in one of your hobbies and like go travel around. I mean,
you came up with that, but how did you ever get on the elevation high points? Was that just sort of a, we ought to do this?
Well, I think we stopped by Mount Sunflower in Kansas on one of our trips to Colorado. And then I just started getting interested of like, well, this is the Kansas high point. I bet every state has a high point. Just got curious and you look it up and find out, hey, this is a thing. There's also the low pointers who get to the low point in every state. So, you know, for people who like driving places and not hiking, that is an excellent option.
The low point.
Yeah.
That's pretty fun. Okay. So RV stuff. It sounded like you guys tested the concept first, which I encourage people like test it out before you think, hey, I'm going to do this huge, major life change and assume that I'm going to like it. So can you talk about testing the whatever camper vans or RVs or whatever you did?
So I learned this concept through Jillian Johnsrud, her work and her material, that she was big on the concept of test and scale. And I was like, well, that makes sense. Like, if you're thinking about a huge life change or even a small life change, but you don't know, try it out. See how it goes. You know, see what parts you like, what parts you don't like. So as we were thinking about this, we rented an RV that was already parked at a campground in Buena Vista and did that for a week to see, can we even stand being in the same space together for that amount of time?
Barely.
And we found that we could, but there were certain things about that particular camper that we didn't like. And so that was part of the testing and scaling. Mm-hmm.
How long were you in that?
Oh, we stayed there a week, I think.
Okay, yeah. Cool. And then how did you take the next steps?
That was kind of on me. I just started researching the different types of campers, fifth wheels, travel trailers, camper vans. What did we want? We made a checklist. We want enough space for each other. We want enough room for Kristen to do yoga or us to do little workouts. What amenities do we want in the camper? And then we started narrowing down different floor plans, and then we started looking for them, and we found one, and we went and we took a look at it, and we bought it on the spot and drug it home.
Brand new or used?
Used. We're in a 2018 Grand Design, 32-foot fifth wheel, and it's great. It's in great shape.
Okay. And I know, like anything, there's huge differences in quality where if you get the starter RV, the camper, things are going to start breaking and rattling and kind of giving you a hard time. So you get a used one, and then it sounds like it's going well. Like what kind of quality level, if you could just talk about that a little bit.
So Grand Design has always traditionally been higher quality. And there are other camper manufacturers out there that are also higher quality and some that are lower quality. And that's pretty easy to research. I mean, you can find that out just based on reviews. Mm-hmm. But the big thing was COVID. They started manufacturing a lot of campers through COVID because everyone wanted one because they couldn't do anything else. The quality really took a dump. And we were at one campground with our 2018 Grand Design, and we came out of the camper, and there's a lady underneath our camper looking at the I-beams. And I asked her if I could help her, and she said, "What year is this?" And I told her. And she then went into this whole rant about her camper and how the weld broke and the I-beam was going to fall apart and the front nose was going to fall off because of the year that it was manufactured, which was during COVID, and the lawsuit that happened, and it was a big deal. Mm. So we were lucky in that we got one that was pre-COVID, and the couple that had it, basically used it as a park model. It had 1,000 miles on it, and that was all. They drove it on one trip from the manufacturer or from the dealership, parked it in their annual campground, and then they came down every year to stay in it, every season to stay in it. Otherwise, it didn't move. So he told me, hey, look, I'd repack the wheels if I were you, the bearings. And he said, other than that, you're good to go. Now, what we did find out was if tires sit around for 4 years, they rot. And so we had two blowouts on our initial trip. Yeah. But after putting new tires on it, which is just general maintenance, it's been a great camper.
Gotcha. People may wonder, like, does your FI number, was it require, or sorry, was the RV life part of the FI journey where you're like, we need to reduce our expenses, or is it just a lifestyle?
The idea that RVing reduces your expenses is hilarious.
What's your saying?
Yes. My saying is RVing can make you a millionaire if you were already a billionaire. And I, you know, the first couple years of traveling, since, you know, Pete is the one in charge of keeping us on the road. And when you travel, stuff breaks all the time, whether it's in the truck or the camper. And I got very used to...
Well, let's clarify. I mean, all the time. It's not like every day we had an issue. But every time there was a significant issue, it was another $1,000.
Yeah.
I mean, we got to spend another $1,000 on this. Now, so, we weren't doing that on a monthly basis, but they were big.
When, you know, as time is going on, and about every 3 to 4 months, there's another issue that costs another $1,000. And I was starting to get a little bit stressed about it. Then it's like, okay... Looking at the expenses, actually, with this lifestyle, what we spend in gas, RV parks, RV repair, all these other things, that is about equivalent to what we were paying in a mortgage and home repairs and utilities.
You're just transferring.
You know, pre-traveling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's not like there was a significant difference in those expenses. They're ballpark the same. It's just...
Now, with that being said, there could be. We could live very cheaply traveling around the country, but we don't. We choose not to, and we don't have to. And that, there are people that do have to, and we sympathize with them.
Yeah, that is something about traveling and staying in certain RV parks in certain places of the country. You really get to experience in your neighborhood at that moment the difference between people who are traveling because they want to and people who are living in campers because they have to. And... So I continually feel so grateful that we're in the position that we're in, where we do this because we want to. And that's something that I would encourage people who are on their FI journey and they find themselves scared of spending money or struggling with the scarcity mindset. Go find a way to hang out with people who legit have no money. And it's very different from being in your own head and thinking that you have no money. Go hang out with people who legit have no money and see the difference.
It's an eye-opener.
Experience the difference and understand that your position is greatly different than theirs. And it's something that has really increased the gratitude in my life for our lifestyle, for the habits that have brought us to where we are, and that will continue taking us forward. Yeah.
Can you give some examples?
So
Clinton Campground.
So our family lives in Lawrence, Kansas, and when we go back to visit them, we stay at the state park, which is right outside of town. And when you're there, a huge number of the other residents there are living in their campers full time. And it's a little bit stressful. Out at the state park, there are two different campgrounds. And because of how their rules work, so they don't turn into a quote-unquote homeless camp, they require everybody to move between the two campgrounds every 14 days. So we also have to do that when we're there. And for these other people, including families, there's a family with a baby out there in a pop-up camper, and they have to, like, they're raising a child in a pop-up.
With all of their belongings.
Yeah.
They don't have a garage to store all their stuff in. They have all of their belongings. Sometimes they don't have a vehicle capable to pull their camper. So they have to, some people go down to Home Depot and rent a pickup truck for $20. Come back and move their camper and take the pickup truck back.
Yeah.
Some people will just rely on the good nature of their neighbor, or they know someone who's out there at the campground. And when they get done moving their camper, they come over and they move that camper. So it's out of necessity. It's not out of want or desire like we live.
And so it's continually eye-opening for me to understand that while this person might need to live in a camper, it's also the difference between, okay, they might have previously needed to live in a tent, and this is better than the previous circumstance. And so it can be challenging sometimes, but I think it's also important to continually have your eyes open to the huge variety of economic circumstances that exist in the United States.
Well, that's why I appreciate the FI community so much, because everyone that I've met in the FI community is so down to earth. They didn't get their wealth from, you know, mom or dad or grandma and grandpa or whatever, and they weren't born with a silver spoon in their mouth. They worked for it. Maybe not blood, sweat, and tears worked for it, but they had to figure out how to come up with their own funds, and they did. And so they now appreciate it so much more than the person who it was just handed to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's get back to some of the expenses. So I'm curious if you're able to share how much the RV was when you got it used a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Or
what did we pay? 32?
Yeah.
32,000 bucks.
Okay. So not too bad. That's like a lightly used car or something like that, right? And then what about some of the ongoing expenses? And you could be specific. So like, how much does it cost to like stay at an RV park? Like, what about laundry? What about other stuff? Like, I mean, there's a lot of gaps. Like you said, things cost money. So
yeah. And I mean, it's also interesting seeing the cost differences across the United States.
Yeah.
A state park in Kansas, depending on how you do it, is going to be anywhere from $15 to $25 a night to stay at a site, and that'll usually give you electric and water hookups.
Sometimes sewer.
Sometimes sewer. You usually have to pay a little extra for that. If you're staying at a private campground, the KOA, for example, in Kansas, that'll run you $60 to $70 a night.
And maybe even a little bit less than that, but
yeah,
50, 70, right around in that
so
range.
Contrast that with like the Pacific Northwest or California. You're going to be paying $70 a night for a bare bones campsite that might include electric and water, maybe. If you want to stay at a place with full hookups, it's going to cost you $100 to $140 a night, depending on the location.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's just supply and demand kind of thing?
No, I think, well, yes, but I think they're catered more for weekenders and not full-timers.
Okay.
They're used to mom and dad and the kids, the family coming out for a weekend, and it's okay to spend $500 staying there for the weekend in your camper. And there are some campgrounds that offer monthly rates or longer term rates specifically to cater to the full-timers, because they know that we're out here doing this all every weekend, every day, not just to get the kids away from the iPads.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, and one of the things that we also did that Pete really wanted to do, he wanted a solar system on top of the RV. And so shortly after owning it, when we went to Hawaii, actually, he got a solar system installed on it with two lithium ion batteries and an inverter. And I'm very happy I know all these terms now. So it gives us a lot more flexibility in terms of electrical power that we can boondock, which is camping out anywhere without utilities. And so we can easily do the Walmart parking lot thing if we need to, or...
But BLM ground.
Yeah.
Forest ground out here, out west, is phenomenal. Colorado, Utah, Arizona, these places are wonderful to just go out and camp in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. So for anybody unfamiliar, BLM, Bureau of Land Management, if you're on that particular land, anybody can come camp on designated land for up to 14 days at a time. And then after that time, they just presume that you will move to a different spot.
Mm-hmm. They hope that you'll move.
Yeah. Well,
so we do.
For places that, for people who abuse it, they eventually actually like start closing those. So it's really important for the continuation of this privilege in America. Like, just be nice, observe the rules, and like move your stuff.
Pick up your trash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So you have the solar, and what's the limiting factor? How long can you stay out boondocking?
Well, the tanks.
Okay.
Yeah. Our waste tanks is the limiting factor. But we also have the, so we initially invested in a black travel tank, a poop bag, and then a gray water, and then also a freshwater bladder. So
they're two different things, just to clarify.
When our gray and black tanks get full, I can pump everything into this big industrial bladder that sits in the back of the pickup, take it to a dump station, dump it, and then I could fill up our freshwater bladder somewhere and haul it back out to the camper in the back of the pickup, and I can fill up our freshwater tank as well. So theoretically, we can stay out indefinitely.
You just have to
just manage
bring in some water.
That's it.
Deal with the waste or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. And then how long have you guys been out then? What's the longest that you've...
Like out in the wilderness?
Well,
or
no, when we were at the Forest Service campground by Cook City, Montana, they didn't have utilities at the site. And so I think we were there for about 2 weeks. And I think you did a couple water fills while we were there.
At the Forest Service site?
Yeah.
I don't remember that one. I remember the campground.
Yeah.
East of Cook City. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, I just stretched the hose out up to the next thing. I stretched all our hoses out to fill up the tank.
It reached that far?
Yeah.
Oh, all wow.
I used our green hose too, and I didn't tell you.
Ew. Well, I didn't die.
All right. And that's down from the Beartooth Highway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a cool spot if people can hang out. So you get to hang out for like a couple weeks. Would you like drive into the park and go down Lamar Valley and stuff? Or
we go in there once from that direction. But otherwise,
there's just hiking, right? So much other hiking to do outside
of Yellowstone.
We were there because we were going to climb, and we did climb the high point of Montana, Granite Peak. And the trailhead for that is really close to Cook City. So that was like our main reason for being there.
Yeah.
But then we found out we love the area. There's this like awesome restaurant in Cook City that has this like local smoked trout. Gosh, it's delicious. And then, you know.
They had bison.
They had bison fillets, and then down in Silver City, which is just like half a mile away, they had at the lodge there, we saw a flyer that the main bear guy for Yellowstone National Park was giving a talk. And so we went to that one evening, and it was fascinating. And so it just ended up being like a really good stay.
There was a music festival that you would have really appreciated.
Yeah.
It's one of our new favorite songs
by this group. One of the other things that we do is if we run across like volunteering for events, we'll just like say, sure, let's volunteer for this. So we volunteered at the Ironman International Championship in Kona, Hawaii, a bike festival in Bentonville, Arkansas, music festivals. And so it's a lot of fun.
Interesting. We stayed in Silver City once at some Airbnb, or not Airbnb, it was a like set of cabins or whatever.
I can't remember. The north end of Beartooth, right?
No, it's the, so Cook City, and then there's Silver City, and then you go into the park after that.
Red Lodge?
Red Lodge,
The town up the road.
Yeah. Yeah.
We stayed there for a while also at an alpaca farm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And the guys, so usually when we go, they've got something that's called Harvest Host. Are you familiar with that?
A little bit, but let it tell everyone.
Harvest Host is an organization that allows its members to stay at hobby farms or breweries, wineries, other businesses, and you can stay there for free if you frequent the business. So, you know, at a winery, you go and you buy a bottle of wine from them. Or if it's a little hobby farm, you buy some eggs or some of their ground beef or something. And we found some wonderful ones out there. Well, this one was an alpaca farm. So I said, look, is it okay? Can we stay here a few extra days? I'm a handyman by trade. If you've got any work that needs to be done or some mowing or anything else, I'd be happy to help out. And she said, you can mow all day long if you want to. There's the mower. So I go over, two flat tires, couldn't get it started. So we got the tires repaired. We got the mower started. And I went out and I mowed our area where we were camping, where the other campers set up, their whole yard area where the kids come out and play around the trampoline and all this stuff. And their driveway coming down was the roughest drive I've ever been down in my life. And they had a little Kubota tractor with a blade on the back of it. And I asked her if I could get on there and work that drive. And she said, yeah, if you really want to, go ahead. So the husband, who was always in town at the store, they had an alpaca yarn, fur, whatever you call it, store. So I got on like a half a day and I worked the whole driveway down and made it just buttery smooth. It was great. And they were happy just letting us stay there as long as we wanted to.
Yeah, that's awesome. Very cool. All right. So many good stories of like the RV life. I mean, you're telling them right now, but any other highlights where you're like, oh, this is a really exciting one to share. Unexpected things happen.
Yeah. So on our high point adventure, after we got done with Granite in Montana, we went down to Wyoming to get Gannet. And we were going to go in one route, but we called a climbing store to ask, get some advice from them. And they said, oh, do not go in that way where the glacier meets the rock, which is called the Burschund or something like that, that has opened up and you cannot pass it. Don't go that direction. You'll die. We said, okay. So we came in from a different route, which was longer and harder. We drove in, parked the truck, got out, started hiking, and a thunderstorm blew over. And so we waited for that to pass. It passed and we kept on walking. And we were just hiking along, enjoying the views in the Wind River Range, which is beautiful. And we were loving every minute of it until we met this couple of guys who were coming out. And they asked us if we got the emergency notice. And we said, no, what are you talking about? They said, there's a forest fire behind you. We said, what? So we hiked a little bit further until we could turn around and look back. And there's smoke billowing up 10 miles behind us from where we came from. And then Kristen sees this shaggy dog run by in the corner of her eye and can't wonder to figure out why someone would bring their dog out here, and sees another one and says, oh, that's not a dog, that's a bear. So this bear runs across the river, goes and stands up on a boulder on the other side of the river, and her cub, like a year old cub, stands right down below us somewhere where we couldn't see. And she was kind of calling to it by snapping its jaws on from the other side of the river. And so Kristen has this great picture from her phone.
Yeah, I have my bear spray in one hand. Meanwhile, I'm trying to get a picture of out of the other hand of like this bear on a rock. And then behind her 10 miles, you can see these hundreds of feet of wildfire smoke
billowing.
Yeah. Wow. And that's a grizzly in that area, or was it a black bear?
It was a black bear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Still get your attention.
We wouldn't have been taking pictures if it was a grizzly.
No, we would have been GTFO.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, and since the routes to get Gannett are so long, we knew we were going to be doing a backpacking trip anyways. So, of course, we've got 4 or 5 days worth of supplies with us. So, at that point, we had to decide, do we turn around to go back to the trailhead and get our truck? Is the trailhead there? Is our truck even there? Like, we don't have any information. So we decide, okay, we're going to keep hiking. We're about ready to stop for the evening anyways. So we find a nice meadow that was right by a river, which, hey, many thanks to in my elementary school teaching when they're like, what do you do if you're caught in a fire when you're outside? Jump in a river. So fortunately, there was another group of ladies also camped there. And
they were in a worse situation than us because they had all of their gear brought in by an outfitter. So a mule train brought all of their gear and dropped it off, and they hiked in with little day packs. And so now they're stuck in this meadow with a forest fire raging, not knowing what they're going to do.
Wow. Yeah. So fortunately, they had, I think, a Garmin inReach of some kind. So they were texting somebody else so they could get information about what the fire was doing. And they were nice enough to pass along the information to us as we're thinking, okay, we need to upgrade our iPhones so that we actually have satellite texting, because our phones were old because, hey, we're five people. And so we didn't have satellite texting or a Garmin inReach at that point in time. And at that moment, we decided this is not worth it anymore. We need to spend the money on safety. Fortunately, we had paid the money to get Pete an All Trails subscription and me a Gaia subscription. So we had maps available and we could find out, okay, how do we get ourselves out of here? Since probably the best idea to get out is find a different trail. So we found a route that was going to take us probably 2 days to get out that would take us down to a fishing reservoir. And we were pretty sure that we could hitchhike back to Pinedale from there.
Okay.
And then be able to reassess and do what we needed to do. So that's what we did. We found another route out.
It turned out to be great.
It was a beautiful,
gorgeous,
beautiful trip. I mean, except for the whole like,
are we
is the fire
going
to change direction and like burn us whole situation? Yeah.
Gosh.
But we were at the campground. We were starting to hike out on the road.
And this is when we got to the fishing reservoir.
Yeah. After a couple of days of hiking out. And this couple stops with their camper and asked if we needed a ride. So we hopped in the bed of the truck and they drug us out. And Jack and Patty are just the most fantastic people. We end up having dinner with them. We stayed in the same hotel with them. And the next morning, the manager even offered to give us a ride back to where our truck was.
Wow. So one of the smart things that we do is instead of bringing our car keys with us when we go backpacking, we actually have a lockbox on the truck. So we leave the keys with the truck. And this is in case, you know, one of us falls down and dies. I don't want the car key falling down a mountain
with one
of us.
When I fall down and die.
Yeah.
Kristen can drive away.
You know, it's good to have these things in mind. So as we're driving out, we meet up actually with the fire incident public information officer. So we start chatting with her and say, hey, our truck is at the trailhead. The keys are with it. If we give somebody the code, can a stranded hiker drive it out? Can a fireman drive it out? Can somebody drive it out? She's like, sure, we'll take care of it. And like, it was just so awesome having Jack and Patty give us a ride out. The PIO was super great. Public information officer was super great about, hey, let's make the connection to get your truck out. The hotel manager giving us a ride to get our truck after that. It was just so nice knowing there's still really nice people in the world who are willing to help you out with things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And hopefully we would do the same if the situations were reversed.
Man, what a hike. What a story.
Yeah. So I came home. We got back to the camper and I immediately sat down and ate half a container of salsa con queso as my emotional support.
Oh, man. So everything was just like ash
everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
But otherwise,
truck was coated, okay. But it was fine. The fire came right down to the trailhead, but they had cut a fire break. Okay. So it came down the hillside, the mountain, and burnt everything right up to the lake, basically, which is where the trailhead was.
Damn. Yeah.
And a fireman drove it out right through all of the ash and soot and smoke and everything.
If you need to look it up, look up the Dollar Lake Fire in the Wind River Reservation.
Interesting.
Not reservation,
range.
Wind River Range. The reservation is on the other side. Yeah.
So we do have to wrap up here. I see time's just ticking by here.
Sorry.
So quickly, upcoming adventures. It sounds like you're going to hang in Colorado a bit and do some 14ers. Yeah. So yeah, anything specific that you're going to be working on?
I'm looking forward to hiking Mount Lindsay for some reason. And then Pete's looking forward to all these other ones that are going to be really hard.
All right. And so you're going to be around for like a few months in Colorado, just kind of going around different campgrounds
and
such?
Yeah, we have a few side trips every now and then. You know, we're going to be dog sitting for some friends in Arizona. And then I've got a friend who's turning 40, so we're going to go to Arkansas for that. And then part of the Better Body Challenge, which will be in the sound check, they have a retreat at the end of every challenge. So we're going to be going down to that over Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
Very cool. And the one thing we didn't get to is the estate planning stories. Should we save it for some time in the future? Or do you want to talk
around?
About it?
So.
Okay.
Yeah, we can.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I'm like, otherwise, cause I mean, you could do a whole episode on just like some of those ideas.
Bonus content for your Buy Me a Coffee subscribers.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I am a subscriber of Buy Me a Coffee for Mile High Fi. And
thank you.
I'm not a significant sponsor, but it's enough. Doug can buy a McDonald's coffee once a month.
Right. And you were on very early, one of the first 10 or something like that, I think. So
yeah. So shameless plug. Shoot some dollars that way.
Do we owe you coffee?
Something. No, you don't owe me. This has been super fun. I think we could have talked on and on and on, but we do have to wrap it up. You don't have to, but if you have any like parting words or wisdom you wish to impart, you can. You don't have to. The whole episode has been that, but
yeah, probably like
Elizabeth. If you're watching this, get rid of some of your plants.
No. Oh, she has great plants.
She has great plants.
Yeah.
She has so many plants that they're named.
Yeah. I think from...
Well, and so when you said that she got excited when we were talking about minimalism, I thought, I don't think she was excited. I think she got frustrated with me because I was teasing her about the number of plants that she has.
Oh, man.
No.
In a nice way.
Yeah. No, I think my big thing is, are you in Phi for some sense of security, or are you in Phi so that you can design the lifestyle that you want? It's worth thinking about.
You're leaving us with a question. That's a tough one. All right. That's good.
For you to journal about later.
Yes. Well, thanks a lot. And
thank you.
Super fun. And I'll let you know when you could come back in the studio, because I think we have some more stories to cover.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds
all right.
Sounds good.
Thanks. Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Fi podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. So you guys are doing the fitness challenge with Rachel and James, and I'm curious like how it's been going overall. And I'll leave it open. I have follow-up questions, but Pete, why don't you start? Because you're in it right now for the first time.
Yeah, this is my first round, and this is just my overall impression. Or, well, I'll give you my overall impression. It's fantastic. It motivates a person to get up off their butt, which is something that I have needed previously in a past life. It was easy when I was training for races and stuff. It was very simple to get up in the morning and go out and do things. And then you get into kind of a lull. And yes, we're traveling full time, but it's also just as easy to sit inside and sit on the computer and look stuff up and check the news and blah, blah, and maybe watch a movie instead of go outside. But now you've got to get 10,000 steps. You've got to do this or do that. And how am I going to do that? Well, the outdoors is right there. So let's go.
Yeah, no hurdles. Okay. So you used to train for races and stuff, but like when you had a specific thing to work on, then you were like, okay, I need to do this schedule, this training is mapped out for me, but without a goal, you're just kind of like, other stuff pops up.
Got my goal back now.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. What about you, Kristen?
So this is currently my second round. I did it. They have rounds of roughly 6 months, give or take. And so my first time was last round, and it was really motivating where the guidelines that they have set up, just briefly, you walk at least 70,000 steps a week, exercise 5 times a week, including 3 weightlifting sessions. You eat your particular protein goal at least 6 days a week. Am I missing anything?
No.
And it was great to have that format and the accountability of this is what it takes, bare bones, to be a very in shape person. And it's very effective, since even just doing that, I've pretty sure I lost about 10 pounds of body fat and also gained lean muscle. Mm-hmm. And because part of the challenge is also you get a DEXA scan before you start, and then a DEXA scan, like as that round is wrapping up, you've got consistent measurements so you can compare your stats before and after. So it's very effective. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to sign up again, since I could see for the other people who had done it multiple times, even the progress they made with consecutive rounds of it. So gotcha. That was motivating for me, seeing their progress to see, oh, hey, this can even get better.
And it did for so many of the participants down there. You oftentimes notice that when someone starts a weight loss program, man, that first month they drop a whole bunch of weight and they look so much better than they did. And in this contest, that first 6 months, they lost a lot of weight. They got in really good shape, but then they did it again and they maybe lost even more weight and got in even better shape. So it's just, they're just building on building on building.
And it makes sense. Like, I feel like there's only so much you could focus on. So maybe at one point you're like, I have to focus on the diet, and that's a certain stress. And then maybe the next time around, you're like, all right, more on the weightlifting portion of it or something like that. I don't know.
But much like the FI community with finances, this group is also always available for any questions that you might have with your nutrition, with workouts, with different form of your workouts, with different exercises that you can do when you're traveling in Croatia. I mean, everything under the sun. There is a resource there by just sending out a message or dialing somebody up.
And then, Kristen, for you, like, what was the biggest impact the first time around? Because it seems like you guys are pretty active, like you're hikers, you're outdoors, you do have time to do stuff. So in the different categories, which one was the biggest contrast from the steady state beforehand?
So I have the particular challenge that I do not enjoy lifting heavy objects. I don't see the point. I was like, I married Pete to lift heavy objects for me. Why do I have to do this myself? But
I'm a mule.
So getting into any kind of weightlifting routine that I could tolerate, that was one of my goals for last session. And I feel like I accomplished that. And then one of the second goals was eating a decent amount of protein. So the math they use is your by grams, you take your body weight and then take 80% of your desired body weight. So that's the math that they use for grams of protein. And because I knew that was going to be hard, I started practicing eating protein 2 weeks before the challenge started, since I was like, I do not want to. Well, so if you don't meet your goals in any particular week, you lose $100. And I just had this going through my head. James and Rachel each already have enough money. I don't want to give them any of my money. And that was very motivating.
And it worked.
And it worked. Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
I didn't get any fines last challenge. And I don't want any fines this one either.
And the thing is, it's like same with the steps and the protein. You don't accidentally hit those numbers without like starting early in the day.
With some effort.
Right.
You have to, you have to eat plenty of protein in the morning, and it's best. I'm curious if you found this. You can have shakes or powders or whatever, way less filling than actual real food. So I ended up eating, I haven't done this in a little while, I've kind of gotten away from it, but it's about time to go back. But I would have like ground beef with my oatmeal in the morning. And it's great. People think it's crazy, but I don't really care. It was fine. Yeah. It was fine for me. And I would get whatever, like 50 or 60 grams of protein and the fiber, and I would be full for many hours versus like if I just have like a protein shake with the equivalent number of grams of protein, it's like I'm hungry in an hour and a half or whatever.
I look at people who don't eat breakfast and I just shake my head. Because it's especially folks who are doing this challenge or another challenge trying to get protein in, man, get up at 7 a.m. and get some food in your stomach right away.
Yeah.
It gives you a shortcut for the rest of the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the funny days that I had last challenge was I had not gotten my day started with protein. And it was like 4 p.m. and I still had 70 grams of protein that I needed to get for that day. And so I got it. In like 3 hours, I consumed 70 grams of protein and I was so tired. Like just I was just physically tired that my body was just like, why did you eat this much protein all at once? Now we have to digest it. And it was exhausting.
Yeah.
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 Best night's sleep I ever had.
Yeah, I mean, like, what is that? Like a giant, it's like 12 ounces of chicken breast or something like that.
Oh, yeah, and a protein shake and,
Yeah. Fun. Okay. Well, and we'll wrap this portion up, but like what, Pete, are you focusing on? Obviously, there's three different areas, but I'm curious if there's one where you're like, I am really working on X.
So I was in pretty good running shape at one point in my life, and I want to get back to that. Maybe not be as fast as I was because that was 10 years ago, and I recognize that age catches us, but I'd like to get back to being that lean again. And I haven't started cutting yet, but I'm about to. So right now, I've just been working on strength, being able to go out and run consistently day by day by day. And so I'm expecting that in the next 3 or 4 months when the challenge finishes off, then I'll be back to running shape.
Nice. And then what about you, Kristen? Any specific focus this time?
This one's a little bit different. So like for starters, the goal was to keep losing body fat and gaining muscle. Since I've noticed, like I love hiking and I've noticed that my hiking is so much stronger after I started lifting weights. One of the challenges I've run into, actually, like last week, I got diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and it's very new, And one of the goals of that is you're trying to reduce your inflammation as mm-hmm. much as possible, which it's totally different goals, but I'm seeing how reducing inflammation plus the fitness challenge can go together. So I can still keep getting as strong as possible, but also decrease like internal inflammation as much as possible. So my goals this round are still be fit, but also start going towards health. Like your outward appearance is only one small portion of your overall health. And so I think it's important for me to be flexible with this so that I know that I am looking out for my general health as well as outward appearance or like athletic performance things. So
with that being said, they follow suit. You focus on health and strength, and your outward appearance and your abilities just follow naturally. You've become a much stronger hiker, much less complainy hiker.
I think I'm going to complain while hiking and backpacking, regardless of how fit I am.
Yeah.
It's part of the type 2 fun.
No.
That's true.